My name's Layla Carey, and for the next hour, we'll be talking with candidates for Ketchikan City Council. With me in the studio are Sam Bergeron, Jana Lee Gage, Dragon London, and Spencer Strasburg. Good evening to you all.
Hello.
Good evening.
And this is a call-in show, so if you have any questions for the council candidates, please call 225-9655. But first, we'll start off with introductory remarks from each of the candidates. Tell us about yourself and why you're running for council. We'll start with Sam Bergeron.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Caribbean, for hosting this event, and thank you to the listening audience and my fellow candidates. After getting back full-time to the place I love, my home in Ketchikan, I wanted to also get back to the local politics and the city council. My time that I served on the city council, the borough assembly, and the planning commission, and the tribal council has given me a well-rounded perspective of what our community is as a whole and some of the challenges that we face going forward. As a new grandfather, I was reminded how expensive it is to raise kids and provide the necessities. Our sales tax on items like food and residential rent have always been incredibly unethical and harmful to those of us who can't afford food and rent and baby clothes. The government doesn't have a higher and better use for your money than those items, and we should not be taxing you on them. But we do, and we have become dependent on those tax revenues. I would propose to exempt some food, baby items, in an attempt to wean our government from its dependence on a tax that's not in the community's best interest. Do we get a closing argument?
There is a closing statement.
Okay,
yes.
Thanks. And so I'll save the rest of it for them. But I'm just glad to be here and glad to be participating. Thanks.
Thank you. And Jana Lee Gage.
Hi, Jana Lee. It's been a pleasure working and advocating for all of you, our community, and our residents. The past 3 years have been fulfilling, but we still have a lot of work to do, and I'm here for you, running for another 3-year seat in October. I will continue to advocate for our elders, the disabled, and those that are having a hard time finding affordable housing. It is well past the time to look and begin working on a solution regarding the issues of rising cost of living in Ketchikan, and it is important to me that our community is given a choice to remain in their homes here in Ketchikan. Thank you.
Thank you. And Dragon London.
Thank you. Hello. Never give me a microphone. Okay. I've been here for about 14 and a half years in Ketchikan, and during that time, I've worn a few different hats. My roles, I was the Women in Safe Homes Executive Director, Marketing Coordinator for Ketchikan Visitors Bureau, which is probably my greatest joy, marketing Ketchikan to the world, and also as a community support supervisor for Hope Community Services, working with those who are experiencing developmental disabilities. So I feel those experiences have given me skills that I think will be useful on the council. I've consistently been in civic activities, working on many city committees, participated in numerous community task forces and community awareness programs. I'm currently a commissioner on the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Planning Commission. I'm also, I think it's about 8 years, I'm commissioner on the City of Ketchikan Historic Commission. My prior experience coming to Ketchikan, prior to being here, was 15 years overseas, doing international business development and consulting, really with an emphasis on small business development and microloan startup programs. And prior to that, I kind of came up through the ranks of social service, started as a counselor and ended up as an administrator for the state of Washington. Along the way, I was an organization and performance auditor for the state of Washington. And I feel those also bring many skills that I think will be useful in terms of looking at the needs of our community and being able to critically look at how we need to address those issues. I hold a BA in psychology and a master's in whole systems design. Why am I running for office? It's really politics, I feel, is really something that's in my blood. I grew up with it.
You don't have to wear the headphones unless somebody calls. You can take these. Dragon is having headphones issues.
My head's too small. I'm sorry, I'm going to control myself. Okay. Anyway, my grandmother was a suffragette. My mother was a state and national lobbyist. I grew up in the legislature of the state of Washington. I feel civic duty is a requirement in my life, and I have that opportunity now. I haven't been able to make this type of commitment before this point while I've been in Ketchikan, and I can do it now. I'm free to do it, and I really want to do it. Yeah.
Thank you. And Spencer.
Spencer Strasburg. I'm a 20-year resident. I've run for city council twice before. This is my third time at the run. I took last year off to attend to some medical stuff for my lady. But I'm back at it, and I guess I'm probably a little more fired up this time with kind of a special purpose, and I really felt like I wanted to get back out there and give the 565 people that supported me in the race, in the 2016 race, an opportunity to be heard. I know I'm not the most traditional candidate that's run for this position, but I think that I'm a highly skilled one for the job. And that's why I'm running. I don't come with a lot of politics in my blood. As a matter of fact, I probably come with zero politics in my blood. I'll carry my copy of Robert's Rules of Order so that I can play in this game. But I'm here for different reasons. I'm here to exercise my business skills. I think I have a unique set of skills that allows me to be a really good leader in the cruise ship industry here. I think that I've figured out how to keep a business alive downtown, and that goes a long ways. That's probably going to be one of my biggest achievements in life, really, to start with zero experience, not really even much of an idea, and just find people with the same common interest to push this thing forward and figure it out along the way. After 5 or 6 years, I've figured an awful lot out about it. And that's what I think. I think that's why there was 565 people that supported me, even though this is kind of a non-traditional kind of a candidate. And so I'm back in it, and I'm going to run again, and I'm going to keep running. I can assure you that I'll be just content with running until something else changes. I won't quit. I like doing it. I like pushing myself. I think it makes me a better person, and I think that's what we need to do in our community is step up if we have the ability, and that's kind of like my response to my ability. And so it's my responsibility to step up and say, I think I'm the best leader at this table for this city, and I don't mean that the other people don't have fine skills, but I think at this time I'm the best leader for that spot. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And again, this is a call-in show, so if you have questions, call 225-9655. And I do have a list of questions, and all of them were submitted to me ahead of time through social media. So these are from members of the public. And the first question is, what are the top challenges facing the city, and what are your solutions to those challenges? This time we'll start with Jana Lee Gage.
Well, I think there's about, if I narrowed it down to three, I would say that one of the first challenges is the berth expansion, and also looking at how many is too many when it comes to adding more people to our community on a daily basis. And not to say that the income and the revenue that we receive from that the cruise ship industry isn't important, I think we also need to consider other viable industries due to the fact that I think we've been here before with the pulp mill, and we had our eggs all in one basket, and we need to understand that we don't want to be doing that to ourselves in the future again. We have another, a unique opportunity to really take a look at the cruise ship industry, and I believe that we have a more of a opportunity to decide and give our straight up points to the cruise industry what we want, how we want to our community perceived, what we're willing to do. And I think that they're going to listen because people do want to come here. And we also have an opportunity to make sure that it's done in a respectful manner to the community, the culture of the community, and so that it just doesn't benefit a few, but the majority of the community. One of the other issues, and most people I've spoken very loudly about, is our healthcare provider and what needs to happen with the hospital and the opportunities that and the holes that we have in GAP when it comes to assisting individuals with mental health issues and substance abuse and getting those holes filled, and also the billing issues. Those are complex issues. They're not, I wouldn't say that they can be solved overnight. However, they seem to be, things are starting to move. However, we need to keep on it. Those are my two. And then the third one I would say is our housing issue, which also plays into our income base for our lower income community members. And the fact is that minimum wage is not kept up with the cost of living, and it is starting to show, and it's starting to wean on our community. And people are having a very hard time, and that needs to be another issue that has to be addressed and has to be done respectfully. And my push on those things is there's multiple organizations that have been working on it. We have a database at the day shelter and the night shelter, and multiple nonprofits have been using to collect the data on our homeless issue, and which will eventually statewide get us a larger HUD funding. And that was a project that we pretty much started last year, and it's being implemented. Ketchikan was the only one that wasn't on that HUD, that database, and we got it going. And I'm really hopeful that we will see the product of that data in the near future, or HUD funding for in our community. So.
Thank you. And Spencer.
Well, as far as real problems, I think she addressed a lot of the real problems, but I want to be sure that I'm clear about giving like some real solid answers. You know, we can sit here and say we're going to address something. Yeah, that's like a nothing answer. And so at the risk of not sounding quite as prepared because I don't have paperwork in front of me, I want to always make sure in this run that what you're getting is right straight off the top of my head. So I might sound a little bit confused, but I want to address a few of those things. And so, like, for example, we need to address not looking at the local to support this industry. We need to find ways to tap the revenue from those cruise ships. We haven't done a good job. I feel like what we've done is we've sat back and we've kind of tended this spot. And what we need to do is get together collectively to work this spot. So like, for example, I'm going to try to be as quickly as possible. When we did the survey with the city council, had a survey done to ask MoFat and Nickel how we upgrade our uplands and stuff, and they came back, and part of that survey said something to the effect of, hey, we need to buy Talbots, or you should buy Talbots over there and develop that as it's the last big chunk of property and stuff. And I remember Mr. Coos got up quickly and said, council's not interested in going that direction. And I thought, wow, that's strange. So it was a little time later, I was at lunch at A&P when I saw Mr. Bob Sievertson. And I said, hey, Bob, hey, one thing, I didn't understand something. Why wasn't the council interested in going that direction? It seems like it makes sense to me. And the response was, well, the city doesn't want to take that off the tax roll. And so I kind of walked away thinking, wow, let me think about that a little. So I did. I rode home, and I'm eating my sandwich, and I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking, whoa. Man, that just seems really short-sighted to me. It seems like we could take that property, we could develop it. Maybe we could put those lunch trucks that I was talking about 2 years ago we needed downtown when I was running this thing. 2 years ago, I thought, wow, I got these great ideas about the lunch truck. And the funny thing was, I guess maybe I'm maybe my ego or something. I thought, dang, I didn't get the seat. And now they'll probably take my ideas and implement them, and then they won't be mine, kind of. And then after, like, now it's like 2 years later, and nobody's implemented anything. So exciting enough, I'm going to keep hammering away with ideas. But part of those were like the lunch trucks. Like, we could put lunch trucks there. We could lease out more spaces than the few spaces that we have so that more of the tour operators could then take advantage of that. We could increase our revenue, and we could probably do way better than the tax money that we're making that taxpayer pay. You see, that we're looking at it like, hey, the taxpayer should fund this industry. And if I'm wrong about any of this, you shed some light on this, Jana Lee, because I could be wrong. I watch parts and pieces and try to stick it all together. So at any rate, we weren't interested in that one. But so another one, I'll just spit another one out off the top of my head. You know, at the beginning of the summer, we talked about putting a crossing guard at the tunnel location because the Bliss is in now and traffic increased and stuff, and it's a super dangerous zone. And so I've been kind of saying that for the last couple of years. I've watched a couple of people get hit, and I've watched numerous accidents, and I realized how dangerous it is. It's like a four-way intersection with some of the traffic coming from behind, and like it's like probably the most dangerous intersection we have, but we don't have a crossing guard there. And at any rate, they were talking about it early in the season, and it happened this year, one day. On the Blueberry Arts Festival day, we put a crossing guard out there. And I thought, wow. But I noticed something that happens because I sit there every day. And so the traffic comes down the street there, and the people don't really know to cross. And we're not properly funneling our traffic. I think we're looking at it like, wow, one of those crossing guards is going to cost us $20,000. So we don't really want to put it there unless we absolutely have to have it. But in reality, what happens there is the people, and I like to call them fish, they're coming down the stream. And the fish are coming down the stream, and they start to make the decision whether to cross the street at the really risky intersection. There's lots of dangerous, like, sharp stuff. And so they don't know whether to make it. And some of them chance it and go across that stream to the other side. And the rest of them stay on that side of the sidewalk. And they don't find any fruitful foraging down that side. There's like in the mornings, early mornings, there's one closed liquor store on the corner. And so as they start going down there, they realize, hey, I'm on the wrong side of the street. So then Ma and Pa Kettle clutch arms, and then they race across to Annabelle's, and traffic gets all messed up. And then they've passed up like my store and the Mermaids and Annabelle's and those kinds of things. But you see, if we put the person there for the $20,000 and we get safety, we also get better flow, so we get better sales, so we bring in revenue from our tax dollar, and we pay for that person standing there. And then that's how we create jobs. And I've got tons more ideas, but I don't want to ramble on. So I'm going to give some other people some time to kick in some really good, strong ideas and not just suggestions about looking at stuff.
Why would we do that?
Thank you. And Sam Bergeron.
Thanks. So the question was, what are the top challenges and what are my answers to them?
Solutions, yes.
Solutions. That's actually a very good question. I think Janelle did a pretty good job about talking about the port. But for me, when I'm thinking about running this year and about what I really would like to accomplish on the council, and is to start getting some of these costs in hand. You know, we look at the cost of sales tax on food. We look at the cost of sales tax on heating oil, residential rent. And I'm a new grandfather. I got sent down to the store to buy my new grandbaby some diapers. $13. And another dollar on sales tax on top of that. And I got to thinking about what was it like when I was a new father? I mean, what was my income stream like? And I think that we as a community need to make better decisions about what we're going to tax. I think residential rent and food is outrageous. I don't think we should do that. So my first answer to that question is the cost. It's the cost of government. It's the cost of living here. It's the cost of property taxes. So all of us in local government like to puff our chests out and tell you that we didn't raise your property taxes this year. The millage rate has stayed the same, but your evaluation didn't. Mm-hmm. So that means that your property tax bill's going up. So I think that when we start talking about property taxes and, you know, we didn't raise your rate, I think what we need to do is be more honest and tell them that, your valuation of your house is going up, but we're just going to charge you more on the valuation. So I think that we need to get those costs under control. In 1999, the Alaska State Legislature enacted a $150,000 senior citizen property tax exemption. And if we had taken that money and just every year added for inflation, I think that number today needs to be around the $300,000 mark. I want to take a look at that. I want to approach the borough with that. I want to talk to the city about that. And we need to encourage our senior citizens to retire here. Because I'm going to retire here. I was born here. I was raised here. This is home. And I think I want to take the intent of the legislature in 1999 and add on to that number. We have the cost of utilities. So the cost of utilities this year, it looks like we're going to be burning some diesel fuel. We need to find a way to develop our existing hydro potential. You know, we have a lot of lakes around here that we're not developing because we have some roadblocks of our own making in the way, and I'm going to take a look at that if I get elected on the council. But the port development's a big one. You know, I think a few people have been asking the right questions on that. How many folks is enough? Well, I think that we need to take a good hard look at the uplands development, as Spencer alluded to, and do some meaningful things to make our community really a good one to go to. I spent a couple of years in Juneau. Those guys did a great job.
Way ahead.
And, you know, I'm from Ketchikan, and we've been competing with Juneau in basketball and everything else, and now we're going to compete with these guys by having the best cruise destination in Southeast. That's my goal. That's our goal. You know, if we're going to be a cruise destination, let's be the best one out there. Let's do that. And all of us will benefit because we'll have a better place to be. We need to do more with the crossing guards. I mean, it's you know, I drive through downtown a few times every day, Spencer, and I can tell you that it's harrowing,
right?
And you have to be patient. And I think all in all, the folks in Ketchikan are more patient this year than they've been in past years. A few people are still knuckleheads and yell at the tourists and honk at them. And just remember, when you go somewhere and somebody honks at you, then it'll pay back. But I really want to take a look at those issues. The cost of sales tax, the cost of all the things that we as a government charge, we need to really take a look at that and start making it more fair and start bringing some tax relief to all of us. I mean, everybody in government gets a pay raise every year. I want a pay raise, and I want to give you all a pay raise. And
I have more ideas for that, too.
So the next one, which is really important, is our aging infrastructure. I mean, we haven't talked about that, but our sewer lines and our water lines and our utility poles are old. And we don't have any kind of a schedule to keep them all up there in top-notch shape. We have fallen further and further behind. And so just don't forget that we have all the things that we want to do. We still have a lot of obligations that we need to take care of. That's all I got.
Thank you. Ann Dragon.
Good points. All of you, good points. Well, I think I have to put probably
just leave them off.
I'm sorry.
For those listeners out there, I just Dragon continues to have headphone problems.
I was going to have one of those long pauses, like
dramatic pause.
Yeah. Thank you. I really have to say the dock expansion is the number one economic issue, and I think it will be for the next 20 years. And part of what needs to happen with that is we need to accept it, because either we expand those docks or we won't have cruise ships. They're coming in the next 3 years, and they're bigger, and we have to expand all the docks. And so that in itself is a primary issue. And so I think a great deal of energy and planning needs to go in that process. And I'm going to kind of separate in my mind out the docks from the uphill, uplands planning. Because at this point, you know, we are definitely out looking, and this will be an ongoing issue for the city to go out look at funds for expanding those docks. And there's lots of varieties of ways that can happen. Some could be partnering with the cruise ship line. Some, you know, there could be various ways that we're going to, you know, reach those dollars, but that is going to have to be a big piece of that. But as Sam said, another big issue is the uplands. And the reality is there is no uplands plan, and that's very dangerous. It's very, very dangerous and unsafe for our community members who are utilizing this space just as much as we have the tourists coming off those ships. And the difference between 1,000 and 5,000 coming off that ship, and the big ones, big cruise lines that are going to be coming here, have like 6,600 people per ship. So we have to really come up with a comprehensive plan, and I think that's going to take a lot of community involvement, because we have to look at ways to move those people. As Spencer was saying, we need to move them into the downtown core to help develop those businesses, but we also need to move them off the dock safely, and that's not just lining up a bunch of buses, sticking them in the buses and moving them out. It also has to do with a variety of different ways, directions we're going to move them in, really, you know. It might be that we're going to develop more tourism over in Pennock Island or Gravina, you know, that they're moving in other directions, creating other products. But the point is we need to come up with a comprehensive plan, and that's going to be a community project, and that's how that's going to happen. And I know there's a lot of investment through the historic preservation community folks who are very interested in being involved with that and maintaining our historic character, our heritage. It's important. So that, to me, is a primary task, and there's no easy answers to that yet. I think they're there. I think the dollars for the docks will happen. But we just need to, I think we're going to have to partner with people in that. I think the next I want to say is, and I think Sam also talked about it, and Jan Lee did, but I think we need to definitely diversify our economy. I think we've spent too much time looking at supporting our economy through taxes. I don't know about anybody else, but my pockets are empty at this point. You know, so taxes isn't the way, and sin taxes aren't the way. We need to diversify our economy and look at how are we going to develop that. And I think, you know, these kind of mingle together when you look at that. I mean, under the whole auspice of economic development, but it kind of leads me to my last issue, and I think it's really huge. But I think we need to, first of all, support the businesses and industries we have here now, for instance, Vigor and various other industries going on. I think we need to make sure that we have policies in place that help and assist those people, and we need to have policies in place that assist new business and industry developing, like the mariculture. This is a brilliant industry for our community to move into, and I think there's just all kinds of opportunities. So that's a new industry. We need to be open. I want to say that. Be open to new industries. You know, everybody had some pretty strong feelings about the marijuana issues, but the reality is it's brought in dollars. It has been very significant, particularly statewide. It's been huge. So I think we need to be open to various types of businesses opening up here and hopefully create some diversity, because we don't want all one kind of shop serving the tourists. I would like to see the downtown come alive again, and that people in our community year-round want to be there. And so that kind of ties into one more thing that I think is absolutely critical at this point. And a lot of it applies to much of the business and technology that's going on around our city, the city of Ketchikan. But we need to seriously look at retaining and recruitment of employees. And we need to be competitive. We are not paying our employees enough money, our city workers. We are not we're not retaining them because of that. You know, it's not equitable pay, and we're certainly not recruiting, and I think we're hearing a lot of that through even the borough comments lately. Kids don't want to stay here. There's no jobs for them. Okay, so I think we need to look at this. I was very happy to see that they put out a survey, I think they're calling it, a compensation plan for the city. So I think that's a step. When that gets in place, that will be the tool to help this move forward, to come up with that competitive wages. So I think those are my primary.
Thank you. And sorry, we're swapping out headphones, and hopefully Dragon will have a pair that work better for her. And in the meantime, this again is a submitted question, and the question is, if you want to cut taxes, what services or expenses specifically would you cut to balance the budget? And this time we'll start with Dragon.
I'm sorry.
I'll say it again.
Thanks. I was distracted.
If you want to cut taxes, what services or expenses specifically would you cut to balance the budget?
I'm not sure about that. I think there's always, in any government community, there's ways to cut corners. I think we've done a lot of cutting. There, you know, I can't see a real service. I'm not seeing, we're pretty bare bones at this point, so I'm really concerned about saying we're going to cut services. It's easy to say, okay, we're not going to fund community agencies, we're not going to do this, but I'm just not seeing that as the answer either. I think that we need to look at expanding and developing the economy. So I think there's some very practical things that can be cut in the budget. For instance, why are we still receiving all this paper for billing from KPU? It's a lot of paper. It's a lot of mail. I want to get rid of it. So, you know, there are some ways we can cut little chunks of money. We may have to, you know, really suffer and cut some services. But I think that has to be a community issue, too. I don't think the city council in the South can sit and do CHOP, and I think it has to be a community-wide effort to know what people are thinking about that.
Okay, and Janalee.
Oh, that's a conundrum all by itself. To be honest, cutting corners can be dangerous. We've had that conversation with our fire department and old infrastructure vehicles being changed out for new ones, versus refurbishing. And then we also have, like, we have seriously old sewer lines. We have water lines that are 100 years old. We have sewer lines that are 100 years old. We have bridge infrastructure that's it's old. I think even just the state has proven that cutting is not an answer, because then we are hurting people in the process. I'm going to steal Bergeron's thing about maybe looking at cutting the taxes on foods and different things that are actually would be more beneficial to the community versus the services that we actually supply. Now, one of the ideas that I've thought about, if we were going to cut paper, KPU does put out a lot of paper, and I actually lived in a community where it was the electric bill was a postcard. The water, sewer, and electric was on a little postcard. And I've actually meant to bring that up last time because I had like three of them sitting here. I'm going to take these to the council. I'm going to say, hey, why don't we do this for KPU billing instead of having envelopes and all these mailer things. However, yeah, I have a hard time with that one, you know, especially after watching the state cut 5 beds at the Pioneer Home, and mm-hmm. and our community grants and our nonprofits do a fabulous job, and I've gone through that budget every year for 3 years, and it just seems like we're down there just scraping for pennies. And so, I mean, if I could find something that was useless that I didn't think we needed, I'd say, okay, let's go for it. But I think that's what makes us Ketchikan wonderful, is we can take care of each other. So that's all I got on that one. That's a tough one.
Thank you. Spencer?
I'm probably not a fan at all of cutting stuff. We've been cutting for a long time because we just haven't had extra stuff to float, all kinds of extra amenities. But I do have answers. I have more direct answers than those, I think, on exactly where we get money. That's what I keep hearing everybody say. I heard Mr. Bergeron say that we need to cut taxes, especially on our young folks like that. People buying diapers and food, stuff like that. There are ways to do that. We gotta. It's kind of like I said about that piece of property before. If we keep that on the tax roll, we make our local person pay for it. If we take that piece of property and we turn it into leases and we learn how to work it, we get the money from them tourists out there, and that's way more special money than taking it out of your friends and neighbor's pocket. If you could take it but out of someone's pocket that's saved all year to come here on vacation, it's our job to put a smile on their face, take a little money out of their pocket, and send them on their way with a smile on their face. That's our job. Now, I think I'm going to take a big old spear, and I don't, again, I need more information before I say, hey, this is exactly what I do, but I think I know what I do. I think I would be as vigilant in collecting taxes from those people out there as I have been on my own local people. And I would start by collecting the sales tax on those ships out there. And maybe you can help me out, Janalee, because if I'm wrong at any point in this, please straighten me out. But I believe we're one of the only ports in Southeast that doesn't collect sales tax while that ship is tied up to our docks.
No, we do. Yeah.
We collect sales tax on those ships?
Mm-hmm. When they're inside the borough and they do business, they pay tax.
Yeah.
I was under the impression that we're the only port that doesn't charge that sales tax.
No, but the problem with that is they tend to turn off or shut down their stores on the ship while they're in port so that they're not privy to it.
Yeah.
So then, like, for instance, the casinos can't run while they're in talk.
Certainly the casinos,
like,
yeah, I think are gambling.
But the shops, a lot of, like, for instance, a lot of the crew will get off and go out to Walmart and buy whatever because they can't do it while they're in port at the dock.
Right.
In their own, on the ship. Plus, they're paying sometimes triple on the ship for items like Neosporin.
Right.
You know, it's, but yeah, they pretty much shut down all their stores on their boat when they're in dock. So that's where that is.
I'll have to come up with a better idea.
I'll
check it out more. I was really,
Plan B.
I was under that impression.
Yeah.
But I think that we need to make sure that we're doing business with the cruise ships so that we're all working together to kind of compete in this industry. And that's really what it is. And like I say, that we need to make sure about that tax thing because it makes a big difference. When I spoke of some of those things, I remember a council member that told me we just didn't collect it because there wasn't a lot of it there. And so that's what had made me think that. I will definitely go back and check my sources because I want to be accurate. But if we weren't collecting that because there wasn't a lot there, there's some there. And we need to be as vigilant about making sure that we do that stuff, that we get some of, how about all of the shops to be current with their taxes? The list is too long, it's too big, and it's unacceptable. I've asked about that in the past, and the answer was kind of like, you know, there's some of our local people on the list, and then there's some out-of-towners that are on the list, and we don't really want to enforce the out-of-towners because then we'd be hard on our own locals, and there's just a bar that we keep. You know, you have to pay your taxes if you're going to do business. That's it. You're not paying that tax. You're collecting it from someone else. And so it's just a sign of responsibility to pay that tax. If you're behind in those taxes, it's because you're not conducting business responsibly. And then it's our responsible city council's job to make sure that we enforce those kinds of things, because those folks who aren't being responsible and paying those taxes are taking sales from the few folks who are. And so that's where it becomes a problem. Maybe the business who's paying the taxes don't develop at the same rate as the business who is behind in their taxes. And so that's why it's important to keep things current. I understand getting behind and working with people, and there's one thing about working with people, and there's another thing about being years behind.
Thank you. And Sam?
Well, that question assumes that if we offer a tax cut, that our budget is so finely tuned that we would automatically have to eliminate something, and that's just not the case. What governments do every year, especially our city government, is that they budget. They build a budget, and they base their taxation and user fees on that budget. Well, sometimes they don't spend everything that they budget for. And then those monies get moved over into one of many of their reserve accounts. The city of Ketchikan has many reserve accounts. And the manager, every time I bring this up, always laments that his reserves accounts are not where they need to be. Well, the kind of tax cuts that I'm talking about would be well considered. And they would be not ones that would trigger service cuts, layoffs, those kinds of things. I think if we eliminate sales tax on certain items that bring relief to young working families and senior citizens, that the sky is not going to fall and we're going to be able to handle it just fine.
I think that's good, solid logic.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I'm with you.
I've been there and I've done that. We over budget, we underspend, and we bank the difference. We have some money that we could work with. And so what we do is we watch our budget. We enact some of these tax cuts. For instance, we'll take, instead of a percentage sales tax on fuel, we put a per gallon sales tax on fuel, so that when the price of fuel goes through the roof, the government doesn't experience a windfall at our expense. I mean, those are some of the things that we can do that, you know, if you take a look at what the taxes are, I think that our sales tax is the biggest one. And, you know, I think we could do better than that. And we need to treat the people that we serve and tax them more fairly. You know, that's a point that I want to make. And I want to try to really bring to light some of those things that we could easily do that's not going to trigger service cuts, that's going to maybe make us do some adjustments in our government budget. Because I can promise you, from the people that I am around, don't have the ability to pay those taxes, but it's easier for our government to make adjustments in their budget. So that's what I'm talking about. I am not talking about massive. If we took the sales tax off of food, I mean, it would decimate our budget because it's a huge dollar item. But we need to take a look at some of the food items that we're taxing, formula, baby diapers, things like that. And I've talked to the vendors that they could itemize those things out so they're tax exempt. I mean, let's start treating each other like we're a small community and more fairly, and, you know, because that's what I wanted to do, and that's what that concept was from. That's all I got.
Thank you. And we did
excuse me.
We had a couple of callers, and I guess one of them perhaps hung up before Maria could get to that question. So if you still want to ask that, go ahead and give a call back. We do only have one person answering phones, so please be patient if you do call in. And the question that she was able to get is, if elected, would you bring forth a proposal to the council or voters to exempt groceries from taxes along with rental tax? Do all candidates support that idea? And this time we'll start with Spencer.
I'm not exactly sure what rental tax means. Is that rent?
Residential rent? Basically, oh, residential. Sales tax on your rent.
Oh, I'd be in favor of lowering either one of those two. I think that's what we need to do, is figure out how to lower the taxes on the 8,000, and figure out how to increase revenue from the 1.2 million visitors. You know, that's it. And it's real simple. We got like 8,000 of us. If we can't figure out creative ways to get 1.2 million people to pay our bills, it's just ridiculous. And it sounds, here's the thing. We're the caretakers, right, that keep Disney World open every winter for like 8 months, right? In the dark and the cold and the middle of nowhere, paying $4 a gallon for gas and like $6 a pound for chicken. And we're the caretakers that make it possible for all those folks to come here and experience it. We deserve our cut. That's what it boils down to. You know, we're the ones that make this thing possible. It's no different than if we're going to sit here and talk about negotiating someone's wages. You know, I feel pretty strongly about that, because I know that if I'm negotiating that electrical worker's wage, that's not just an electrical worker. That's the guy that stays here in the middle of nowhere in the dark and the rain and the wind, waiting for my power to go out on Thanksgiving, and he's going to throw on his raincoat and go fix it up in that bucket. You know, I believe he's worth his weight, you know. And so, you know, all of this is true. We deserve more money. We deserve to live better, and we deserve to have those folks pay for it.
Thank you. And Dragon.
We just cut them both. I really can't blanketly support that. It's a big piece. I would love to say yes. Being a person who pays those taxes, I would love them to go away. But I think that would have to be looked at to what, you know, and I think what Sam was saying about certain types of items that we could definitely look at exempting from the taxes, and that's probably more likely than the big picture of wiping it completely out. So I think I'd have to say with that.
Thank you. And Sam?
Yeah, in principle, I absolutely would like to eliminate the tax on residential rent and food, without a doubt. But the practical issue is the government has become completely dependent on those revenues. And if we were to enact that globally, it would be catastrophic to our budgets, both at the city and the borough. So, yes, in theory, and no, in practicality, but baby steps. You know, the question before talked about tax cuts and service cuts. I think that we could implement tax cuts in very considered in a considered, well thought out way, mm-hmm. where we're not cutting services, mm-hmm. but we are bringing meaningful tax relief to young working families, senior citizens, and the people that live here year round. I really like the intent what Spencer was talking about. Is that we have like a million visitors and on our way to God knows where. I think that when we examine those folks, they impact more than just the port. These guys are running over our roads. They're using our water lines. They're using our sewer lines. We need to find a way that we legitimately and can use revenues from that operation to offset some of those costs that we, the year-round people, are paying out of our pockets, and they're not. And I think that's kind of like where Spencer was trying to go with that. And I can tell you that we're all over that. I mean, if you take a look at the head tax, which is really the dockage and wharfage fees for what we charge folks to land here, which the cruise companies don't pay. Those passengers pay that, just like sales taxes. They don't pay that. Their passengers do. We need to start looking at that revenue stream to do the improvements that we need to do. And we need to come up with a number that makes sense, that pays for that. And we also need to take a look at some of the revenues that come off that to offset our infrastructure that is being used heavily by our visitors, who we are so grateful they're here, and we're going to continue to build on that industry, so nobody out there get me wrong. But that's my answer without going on all night.
Can I touch up on something real quick?
Sure.
She's like, yeah, right, real quick. Okay. Hey, I think that what we need to we keep talking about how we're going to implement taxes or cut taxes. So my point was, if I think what we need to do is look at this a little bit differently. We need the city to step up as the economic driver for the tourism industry. The pulp mill was the economic driver for the timber industry, and we haven't really established a main economic driver for the tourism industry. So if the city were able to step up more as that economic driver and create the jobs and create the positions, that's how we create the wealth from that. We can't we're out of ways to just keep taxing. But if the city stepped up and we found ways to pay for that revenue by hiring more of those crosswalk people, we made our uplands more friendly, but we actually kicked in like our KPU technologies and stuff so that we directly access customers, much like the cruise ships do. Our city needs to directly access the customers before they get here. We need to sell them stuff, just like the cruise ships do. They sell our stuff before they come here. We need to step up and figure out how to maximize those opportunities, and we can increase our revenue. There's a million two or something like that. 1,200,000 people saving their money to come here. We got to be able to figure out crafty ways of getting it.
Thank you. And Jenilee.
Well, there's two sides to this. So, one, I think, and it's been my pet peeve with the head tax, is that we're only allowed to use it for specifics. And it's only, the cruise lines only want us to use it, or think we should only be able to use it for the docks, for their ships. And hopefully Juno will win the lawsuit, which has really had all of us tied up in where and what that's going to, where that's going to go. The other thing is the there are multiple communities that I've actually lived in one of them, where in the summertime they raise their taxes to, accommodate the when the tourists come to town, so they add a Kenai adds a percentage to the taxes, and so most of the merchants will have a little button that they push to add that. I think it's 2%, and I could be wrong. It may have changed since I was there last, which was 6 years ago. And in the wintertime, that tax goes down for the locals. So it's more of a when the tourists are in, they pop up the sales tax, and then in the so, and that's not on groceries, just on merchandise and like liquor and stuff like that. And that's how Soldotna and Kenai, they've been doing that for a number of years. It'd be interesting. I've had people say, oh, it's too much of a bookkeeping issue. And I'm like, other people are doing it. I think it's just a matter of putting the system in place and doing it. And I agree. I'd like to see our community businesses getting more of the payout from the cruise lines than, those jewelry stores. But I also believe that we would, because most of the people coming off the ships today are not the same people that came off 30 years ago. They're looking for the actual experience of Ketchikan or Alaska. They're not looking for the plastic, non-traditional touristy kind of stuff. They want to see the real deal. They want to go to Ward Lake. They want to go to Harriet Hunt. They want to hike. And some of the things I've heard this summer is we're not here long enough. And so the next thing, honestly, we need to look at that calendar, and we need to get our hands on being part of the people, or being part of the control of how much time people spend here. Because you come in at 7 in the morning and you leave at 1. Mm-hmm. You don't get to do much. And most people, when they're on vacation, don't want to get up at 6 a.m. to get off the boat at 7 or 8 and have 4 hours to do anything.
Well, that's driven by the current time.
Yeah, well. But anyway, I think there's multiple things there, and I think that I like the adding a little bit of tax to the, you know, and then, but not on food and the bare necessities. So I'm done.
Thank you.
That's all I got for now.
And we did originally intend this to just be an hour, but it's already been an hour, and we've only gotten through a few questions. So we're going to extend this just a little while longer. And the next question is, again, from a caller, and it's on a new topic. Do you support on-site consumption, basically allowing on-site consumption of marijuana? And we'll start with Dragon.
I thought I already went first.
No, I didn't. Back to you going first again.
It's past my bedtime, I told you. Actually, I absolutely do. I've, having served on the, or am serving on the Planning Commission, this has been an issue that's come before us, and so I've been involved with what is required to pull off such a function of having the on-site consumption, and I think that it's been very well thought out by the people who want to do this, and it is making that really that business industry expand here, and that will be to our benefit. Again, we're talking about taxes, and I feel, you know, that they have very viable plans to make that happen.
Thank you. And Jana Lee.
Well, I think there's two things that will stop that, and that's the new state indoor smoking law that goes into effect October 1st, and then it's also the state law pretty much says no on-site consumption. My personal, as most people know, I am not a consumer, nor am I a supporter of it, and that's just my due to the devastation of the people in my family and friends that I spent most of my life working with in substance abuse. But again, with the new no on-site smoking, or no smoking going into effect, and the bars are now having to go smoke-free statewide, that we wouldn't be able to do it anyway.
I think they will. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's private.
And Sam Bergeron.
You know, I haven't given that one a lot of thought, but marijuana is a legal substance. You can go have a drink. I think that if you want to do something and it doesn't infringe upon the life, liberty, and happiness of other folks, knock yourself out. That's all I got.
And Spencer.
I've always supported the industry. I just think it's a healthy outlet for people. That's my own personal belief. From a business standpoint, I don't know. I don't see it going anywhere. I think there's a reason. I think we could probably all say, yeah. I mean, I'll support it. I'll support someone trying it. Do I think it'll work? Probably not. For the same reasons Jana Lee said, there's people fighting that every day. They've made some provisions for it, but it's such a long and lengthy, costly process that anyone who pursued that avenue would be an absolute fool. But that's just my personal views.
Thank you. And we did get another caller asking, how do you feel about the ordinance banning feeding of eagles, ravens, crows, and seagulls? That was approved in first reading by the City Council just this last Thursday. And this time, we'll start with Jana Lee.
I have to admit, I'm kind of torn on it, even though I have actually voted for the first reading of the ordinance. My issue is the fact that I was raised that you don't feed wild animals. And I have an issue with the probability of domesticating a wild animal to the point where we have an issue similar to our bear issue and our garbage issue. And I will probably be supporting it due to the fact that when it came to us, at one point it was a squabble between neighbors, but then it came in front of us and... then we've had multiple letters from airline pilots too. So it's a tough thing. And here's my question too: is one group is doing it. If there's one group doing it and they're making money, which is great, that's the part where I have a hard time with it. But then you have more people doing it, and then you have more people doing it, and eventually we're going to. I just see an issue where we have somebody gets hurt or the animal is hurt in the process of, or they stop training their youth to hunt. Come on, Teddy, bird feather, we're just going to go down here and get food. So we have eagles that are raised on hand feeding. So that's my concern with it.
Thank you. And Spencer.
I just don't think it's responsible with our wildlife, I guess. I've been back and forth on this. I want to make money just as bad as the next guy. It's a great idea, the whole thought of it. I don't know how many great ideas I've had that after I kind of started down that road, I went, well, I never really thought about these ramifications. And I think that's where we're here now. And I think that it's not... I don't think it's anything personal. I think the issue got highlighted. It might not have seemed like too bad of a thing in the beginning, and now as it looks, it's not something we can probably accept. One of the things that I would be cautious to is making fear-based regulation that doesn't make any sense. And so, I mean, right out of the gate, I'm wondering what's going on with pigeons. Because I don't see pigeons on the list, and I know even I get a little excited about the pigeon, downtown. And so I don't want to be that neighbor, but I'm thinking, it's got to be something that's kind of fair, and I don't want this to turn out to be like unfair taxing of the e-cigs. Or here's a really good one. We made this fear-based regulation way in the beginning when we made our Third Avenue bypass, right? We said, hey, downtown's too busy. There's a lot of traffic, so we're going to make this big expressway for us up here on the hillside. So the very first thing we did is we were opening it up, and we said, wait, all them tour guys, they're going to plug up our expressway. And so let's make a rule, no tour guys on the expressway. That's it. And so we did that, and the traffic that we wanted to move downtown really didn't move anywhere because that's the traffic we wanted to move. But at any rate, we've opened up that expressway now under emergency order, and I don't see any troubles, which probably means that fear-based regulation was unwarranted from the beginning.
Thank you. And Sam Bergeron.
Well, I personally think that wild animals should be treated as wild animals and not incorporated in any kind of a tour whatsoever. Like probably everybody in this room, we were all raised to not, you know, feed wild animals. And I don't think it's a very good example to be doing that with our visitors. And I support the ordinance that prohibits it. That's all I got.
And Dragon.
Piggyback all that. I also was raised do not feed wild animals, and I mean certainly in Ketchikan we've seen the reality of that with the bears accessing the garbage and becoming troublemakers. And the bottom line is when they become a troublemaker, we have to kill them, and that just really upsets me. And I, you know, I've lived in islands for over 75% of my life. It's just a shock. I never thought about it, you know. And they're all called the Rock, too. And, you know, and I lived on this island where we had people who came who had property there, but they just came in the summer, and so they fed the deer and the raccoons. Well, then they went away, and all of us who lived year-round had our houses destroyed, you know, because they just tear our house apart trying to get food and get, you know. And it's just not a good idea, so I just can't, you know, support that at all. I do not feed wild animals. Yeah.
Thank you. And again, if you want to call in, we have limited time available. So go ahead and call now, 225-9655, if you have questions for Ketchikan City Council candidates. And my next submitted question is, what can the city do about high bacteria levels in the surrounding ocean, and what do you think is the source? And this time, we will start with Sam Bergeron.
First of all, I think that everybody that's within the city limits is on a sewer system. So the city could most assuredly be testing inside the city limits. Whether we can go outside the city and test is another question that I would have to get some advisement on. But right now, I think they're only testing in the summertime, so I would encourage folks to test year-round to really try to figure out where those bacteria levels are coming from. That's all I got.
Okay, and sorry, I lost my list. Jan Lee.
Apparently the funding for that particular test is from April to the end of this month. And actually, at the last council, I suggested that maybe the borough and city should look into finding the funds to do a test over the winter or find out what it would cost and why they aren't testing through the winter to actually eliminate. Because, you know, we're hearing, oh, it's the cruise ships. Oh, it's this. Well, we also know that we have a lot of outfall and we have a lot of old sub-tanks of sewer, septic tanks. And so how do we eliminate, or and then add in boats, processors, I mean, it's fishing boats. I mean, not to say that nobody's blame-free to that extent, but I think that testing year-round and finding out why we're not testing year-round so we can eliminate some of the culprits that we think might be the issue. And if it's not, and we see a big difference, then we can say, hey, who's not doing what they're supposed to be doing? And if it's the cruise ships, that kind of thing. So that's what I got.
So the reason they're not testing year-round it's funded through a federal program that tests for recreational use. Mm-hmm. And so they have determined, that federal program has determined, that our recreational use of our ocean water is during those months, whereas a similar program in Florida, it's year-round because their recreational use of their beaches is year-round. So that's why it's only tested in the summertime through that federal program.
Well, when they came to the one meeting, they said they had a limited funding to do it year-round.
Yeah,
and so I was suggesting we find out how we could possibly just fund it through even one winter just to see. So that was my suggestion.
And Dragon.
Okay. I totally have to agree with everyone else. I think it's the outfall, the old septic systems. I mean, when we talk, I mean, you have to break it down. What is it that they're what they're finding? They're finding human feces. They're finding animal. And it's, I think, you know, I see what comes out of the processor. Again, I'm down in the marina, and I see what comes out of the processor down there. It's definitely an issue what's coming out of that processor and pouring in out of all of them. So that's an issue. Boats in the marina, you know. That has been a chronic issue for years and years and years, that they don't have appropriate septic systems. And, you know, they've been asked, now they've been told that they have to, and a lot of boats, you know, are in that process. But there are a lot of people that are not turning their boats over into the proper septic systems and yet still living on them. So there's just a million reasons. But I also see a huge amount of animal feces down where I live. You know, there's 25 to 50 dogs being walked 2 times a day on the hillsides going right into the water, and they do not do anything about it. So, you know, this all kind of stuff adds up.
And Spencer.
I would not talk about dog poop.
And you just did.
I know.
And Spencer.
I would think we probably need to get those funds to figure out the source of what's happening out here. I mean, that's a responsibility we need to figure out. And my guess is we probably, I'm real hesitant to point at those state-of-the-art ships up there and think that it's them that's causing it, when it's probably got a lot to do with us. But that's why it's really important to figure out, and probably diagnosing our problem accurately is the first thing I would do to make sure that I come up with a good solution. And so I would spend the money that I need to do accurate testing in the beginning, at least for a period of time, and that would continue all year round so that I could see the different variables and such. But I would also believe that I could tap those cruise ship, the head tax funds for those things. And even if I was saying I didn't think it was the cruise ship, they probably want me to prove it's not the cruise ship. Let's use some of our money to show you it's you guys. So let's get the money from that stuff and then get our water fixed. It's simple.
Thank you. And I'm going to ask you to be really brief in answering this, because then we'll go straight to closing comments after that. This is also from a caller. What do you plan to do for Shoreline Drive residents who pay city taxes but receive no services such as water and sewer? And we'll start with Jana Lee. If you can answer it quickly, hopefully.
Yeah, I know this has been an ongoing issue. I guess the one thing I would ask is, I guess what I'd love to see is the people at Shoreline bring it to us in a sense so that we understand exactly what they're asking for and what they want. I know from my understanding and what I was told that Walmart has to pump out their septic tank on a weekly basis, but then I was informed that that's no longer the case, that they have had a line put in or for that. So whether I'm curious to know if people really want, do they want people, the city, to put in sewer lines? Or I know that at one point we did it to Mountain Point. I remember those lines when they were going in, lived out there, and the cost to the people who lived at the for that connection was large. It was huge. I think that if people are being charged for services they're not getting, I guess I really need to look at what those services are that they're not getting.
Okay, and Spencer.
That's a tough question. I probably would need more information to give a real accurate answer. I would say this: there's got to be some ways to make that accounting more correct. If they are paying a standard rate that someone who's receiving more services pays or something, I'd probably want to really be sure that everybody was on the same page before going forward, because it might look like something like a change in tax appraisal or something to make that happen, and I don't know. Maybe they don't want their tax value going down. So I don't know. That's one I'd have to look at case by case. I don't know if that's more of a borough kind of thing, because I think they could adjust from a tax perspective what you were paying based on actual value. I guess if you're not getting services and you're not getting stuff, you're also not valued at the same rate that someone's house would be taxed at. So I just that would have to be looked at.
Thank you. And Sam Bergeron.
So that's actually a very good question. And it's a question about fairness. And I got to tell you that I feel the umbrage and the anger behind that question. The city annexed Shoreline so it could mm-hmm. capture the sales tax revenue from Walmart. Right. We have failed to adequately provide the services that other city people enjoy. I don't have an answer of how I'm going to ameliorate that and to make it right, but I feel your pain. That's all I got.
And Dragon.
I don't think I can top that. I certainly don't know how we're going to pay for it, but I think it needs to happen. It was done to them, and so I think it totally needs to be. Someone needs to step up to the plate here. But I also am not clear either, as you were mentioning, what really is exactly not happening out there. I need some clarity on that. I appreciate you saying to have them step up, you know, to the plate and talk and educate us, yeah.
Thank you. And we will go ahead and move on to closing statements. And this time you get to start, Dragon.
I always start.
You just finished. And now you get to start.
I'm going to be really brief with a pause. I'm very excited about running for office, and I'm certainly asking for folks in our community to vote for me. I think it's something that I will be an asset to our city council, and I'm hoping that I have the support of individuals in the community to make that happen. My biggest message in closing is I truly want everyone out there, I want every voter to get out and vote. We need you to speak. If you want representation on the council, you need to vote. Thank you.
Thank you. And Jana Lee.
Well, I have to say that the first 3 years that I've, of my last 3 years, has been kind of a learning curve for me. And there's been a lot of things that I have had to learn quick, including the Shoreline issue, which has actually been one of my, like, conundrums of trying to wrap my brain around how that works. It would be my honor and my pleasure to continue supporting and going into the next 3 years with a little more understanding of what's before us and clarity on a lot of the issues that have I have been curveballing for the last 3 years. And with that, I just, like Dragon said, get out and vote. Have your voice heard. It's important. You're important. Everybody's important. And I will be very honored to be on the council again for another 3 years. Thank you.
Thank you. And Spencer.
Yeah, Spencer here. Throw me a vote. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to outwork anybody else on that board. I can assure you that much. I don't make any other promises other than I'll bring transparency. That's my biggest thing. I think that if a guy like me can try as hard as I do to watch city council meetings and keep up on stuff and still be as lost as I am half of the time, that it'll be my job when I get there to shed a little clarity on the situation. So that's what my biggest hope would be if I get there. Give me 3 years. You don't like how I work? You can take the vote back.
Thank you. And Sam Bergeron.
Well, thanks for hosting the candidate forum tonight. It's actually been quite enjoyable, and I've really enjoyed spending the time with my fellow candidates. I just wanted to say that I was born and raised in Ketchikan, and I've been here since the late 50s. And I've had a chance to see a lot of changes in Ketchikan. I can remember as a young boy when the first state ferry came in, and I was standing at the dock in my shorts looking at the biggest ship I've ever seen in my life. I thought that thing was huge. Now I look out the window and see the Norwegian, what is that one?
The Bliss.
It blots out the sun. It's like the Org comes.
I mean,
it's
just our next tag.
Something else. But I'm so proud of Ketchikan, and I'm so proud of where we've come. You know, we're building ships in Ketchikan. We are mostly on hydropower. We have an arts community that's thriving. We have a quality of life here that's we're not here for the weather, except in the summertime. And but I love especially the music community lately. I mean, we have this great jazz and folk and square dancing. And if you haven't gone square dancing, you need to try it. It's a lot of fun. I know all of you that had to do it in
sixth grade.
Yeah, sixth grade hated it, but it's nothing like that.
It's
actually great fun. But if you decide to cast your vote for me, I promise you I will be prepared. I will get things done on your behalf. I have more deliberative body experience in this room than anybody does. Nobody has served on the tribal council, the planning commission, the borough assembly, and the city council, but I have. And I did all that so I could really gain an understanding of what's going on in our community. And I know how to get things done, and I know how to work with other bodies. And I want to be your representative on that council. I have a deep and abiding knowledge of what things cost and how a lot of people are struggling. That never leaves me. We talk about more taxes and higher everything. It's a hard decision for me to okay that. And I want you all to know that I work hard. I'm a smart guy. I'm going to do you a great job. I have great ethics, and I want to be on that council to do your work and your bidding. So I would appreciate your vote this October 2nd. Please vote for Sam Bergeron for City Council. Thanks.
Thank you. And that is it for KRBD's City Council Call-In Forum. I've been your host, Layla Carey. Thanks to the listeners who sent us questions and called in. I'm sorry if I didn't get to your question. And thank you to the candidates, Sam Bergeron, Janalee Gage, Dragon London, and Spencer Strasburg. And please, remember to vote on October 2nd.